Grizzly One.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of five, and to the tune of Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne's Snowblind. We take you on the drive home at five. Late-breaking news, which is a complete turnaround from what we thought was going to transpire, when U.S. Attorney of the Southern District, Preet Bharara, took the escalator up to Trump Tower to visit the president-elect, Donald Trump, and was told, "You're staying on." Apparently, Jeff Sessions will not answer any questions about the president's tweet barrage last Saturday, in which he was accusing the former president, Barack Obama, of committing a felony crime by having his phone tapped. That Jeff Sessions, the new attorney general, is seeking 46 U.S. attorney resignations, including Preet Bharara. Now, I got to say, the only people applauding this are comrade Bill de Blasio, who is no doubt dancing the horror in the tarantella, because he is definitely under investigation and could be indicted by Preet. And naturally, Andrew Elias Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, who has nine of his sycophants, toadies, and lackeys who have been indicted by Preet Bharara, including his leg breaker, his wartime consigliere, Joe Pococo, who knows where all of Cuomo's political bones are buried and who buried them. This is stunning. And if we get any more information, we'll certainly feed it to you during the rest of the drive at 5. But right now, as you heard Bill Evans, our weather guy, talk about how the hawk is going to be coming back out of hibernation. I got to ask you, Bill, how do we go from 60 degrees, 50 degrees, to suddenly what you described will be tomorrow, temperatures that feel below zero?
Yeah, it's brutal. You know, what's happened is, you know, none of the weather patterns globally have changed or started moving towards spring. You know, and we generally see starting to see changes with in Iceland, Greenland, you know, heading towards spring. We start to see some changes. We just haven't seen anything globally change to edge us towards spring. So really, we're still stuck in a deep winter pattern where you have cold air still trapped in Greenland, Iceland, Arctic Circle over Canada, and it's still poised to take a run at us whenever the jet stream can go back south. So the global pattern hasn't changed. What we're under is we're still seeing a lot of cold air that we should have seen in February that was locked up in the Arctic Circle, you know, is still being released on top of us. And that's what we have going on today. We got more of this cold air going to surge over us this afternoon, this evening, and tonight. And it's going to get even colder tomorrow, Curtis, than it was last Saturday.
All right. And that's typically what we expected when we were growing up, the tradition of a winter. But also, you've got some bad news in store for us about the end of Monday, Tuesday. What are you calling for, a nor'easter?
Yeah, well, we're looking at a big coastal storm. This will be different from the one that went by. The one that went by today was more of a, you know, it was a clipper system. It came out of Iowa, cut across the Ohio Valley, and exits very quickly out into the Atlantic. And then that intensifies, pulls down cold air. This is a system that's going to come out of the Gulf of Mexico. This is the type of setup where you get the big storms. The 92, you know, the blizzard. The 96 blizzard, where we got 27, 28 inches of storm. So this is the same kind of setup where you have a big low comes out of the Gulf of Mexico, meets another low pressure system from the Ohio Valley, Great Lakes, with cold air. So one has moisture, one has low, and the two have to come together. It's very hard to make snow, believe it or not, Curtis. So we have one low out of the Great Lakes coming, meeting another low out of the Gulf of Mexico, and those two lows are going to merge right over the mid-Atlantic coast and move northward toward us Monday night and Tuesday. And that's a system that gets tons of moisture. The computer guidance models are putting out, 2 feet of snow for Monday night into Tuesday. Actually, the run earlier had put out 40 inches of snow, but now it's kind of, but they're consistent. And that's the thing. Each computer model run, which is every 8 hours, there's four of them, four times a day, are showing the same consistency. And so the global models, the European models that we also look at, too, there are two of those.
All right, but speaking, Bill Evans, of the global model, you probably saw the front page of the New York Daily News today. It had featured our new EPA chief, Scott Pruitt. Many people think this erratic change in weather, where you go from 60 degrees one day to below zero the next day, is the result of global warming. He is not convinced that carbon dioxide is to blame for global warming. And as you know, he really doesn't believe in climate change and global warming impacting the weather, at least as it's dictated by human activity.
That's right. And I think that he's right in parts of that, in that, you know, the global warming thing has just kind of played itself out. You know, it's just, it's not there, and it's not caused by carbon. So, or anthropogenic means, you know, man-made type of stuff. No, the carbon is there, and the pollutant in the atmosphere is there. But is it warming the atmosphere, or is it creating these Mother Nature mood swings? You know, we're not seeing that. We've seen this kind of weather pattern happen before. March is one of our months where we've had some of our greatest snowfalls. It's a month where we've seen some big blizzards and mood swings. That's why they call it a lion.
Oh, well, speaking of mood swings, I was listening to Imus in the morning this morning. Jeff McKay was giving traffic, and he weighed in with this.
Now, New Jersey Transit's going to be cross-honoring bus and rail tickets system-wide because of all of this snow we apparently are going to get. And the next traffic report in about 15 minutes. Jeff McKay on 77 WABC.
Imus Morning News Time, 8:03. Bill Evans joins us now with the weather forecast. Did you catch that dig at the end? McKay saying the snow we're apparently going to get. Now, it is snowing, right, Dr. Evans?
Ah, little dig there. And then I noticed you fired back with the following.
Yeah, so you're saying McKay shouldn't be so dismissive is what you're basically saying, it sounds like.
Well, I like John, but, you know, the thing about it is...
Oh, you are. They hate each other.
He doesn't know anything about weather and very little about traffic, to be quite honest.
Oh! Now, hold on a second. You're calling him John. It's Jeff McKay. And then Jeff comes back at you with a left-right combination.
Bill, our shirts.
Hey, he's no pants
I will
on
trade
right now,
jobs
either.
With you any day.
Oh! It's on!
Doing weather for me would be like taking a day off.
Wow. Now.
Yeah, they all think that.
Yeah, but Bill, what triggered that off? Yeah, obviously, there's no love between you and traffic guy Jeff McKay, that's for sure.
Look, I'm a New Yorker. I'm not going to sit back and take that. You know that.
Well, wait a second. Actually, you're from MISSISSISSIPPI. You were adopted by New York Channel 7 Eyewitness News and then lent to us to do weather forecasts. So let's get real here. He attacked you as a Southern boy. You know what this is about.
Yeah, well, that's right. We should have handled it with pistols, you know, and had a duel and got it over with and handled it, you know, like gentlemen. We should have handled it that way.
But did you hear the sarcasm? He's doing his traffic report in the morning. There hadn't been a snowflake yet to hit the ground, and he basically was already poo-pooing your fear, fright, hysteria, and hyped forecast from the day before.
I know. It's a frustration with traffic people. They want to be the weather person. You know, they want to be a meteorologist, but, you know, because the meteorologist, you know, gets all the great weather and gets the beautiful girl and, you know, and makes all the money, and the traffic people really, you know, they're jealous, and it's sad.
Wow. So you get the girls, you get all the money, the fame. Meantime, Jeff McKay, he's somewhere out there in a bunker. Nobody knows what he looks like, right? Hey, Jeff, are you there?
I'm with you, sir.
You hearing this?
Oh, yeah.
You took a shot at him this morning, and now he's taking shots. You guys really don't like one another, do you?
Hey, I'm a Hudson County boy, and I'm a New York City boy. We don't take too much smack, let me tell you.
Whoa.
See, there it is right there. He doesn't know where he's from.
What do you mean he doesn't know where he's from? He's a local guy, man.
You can't be from Hudson County, and you can't be from New York. I mean, you got to either be from one or the other. See, he has an identity crisis. That's what it is right there.
How long has this tension been brewing, guys? I mean, come on.
Ever since weather and traffic's been together, you know, it's like less great, tastes great and less filling. It's that kind of argument.
Yeah, but Jeff, sometimes you also sort of, you do bum rush Bill Evans, you end up doing the weather forecast also.
Well, yeah, when he's not right, somebody's got to do it.
When he's not right?
See, you know, I am not going to lower myself into this quagmire of jealousy.
This is what I see, gentlemen, now that UFC and mixed martial arts is the law of New York State. I'd have no problem in encouraging Dana White to actually schedule a bout between our weather guy, Bill Evans, and our traffic guy, Jeff McKay.
Hey, Curtis, I got to tell you, the reason I wouldn't want to do that, Bill couldn't take one of my kids.
Oh,
Wait a minute. He has kids? No, that's a lie.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to have to let this continue to brew. As you can see, there is definitely a love-hate relationship between traffic and weather.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Sound like our sister station there. Who is this? Carrie Underwood, Jesus Take the Wheel? That's what it sounds like. But it is so pertinent in the Drive Home at 5 because it is a perfect re-entry to a subject of, imagine, you're a starlet in the billion-dollar porn industry. You're doing quite well. It's financially lucrative. And then all of a sudden you have an epiphany. 10 years into establishing your credentials in that field, and you flip the script and you become a preacher, speaking about the Word of God and taking a completely different path in your life. It's exactly what our guest, Crystal Bassett, has done. She's pastor of New Beginnings Christian Life Church. And I believe, Crystal, that's upstate New York, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and whereabouts is your church?
We're located in Fulton, New York.
Okay, Fulton, New York. Now, originally, when you broke into the porn industry, you were doing most of your films and most of your activities, what, out in Los Angeles?
Yeah, L.A. was where I was making them all.
Now, what was the circumstance that either encouraged you or got you involved in that business?
Basically, you know, to make a long story even longer, I started out when I was 18 years old. I started out dancing, and I kept having an adult film agency calling me and trying to get me out there to L.A., and I lived in North Carolina for a while supporting my son. I had my son when I was 17 years old, and basically I wanted to give my son, like, this crazy, extravagant, you know, materialistic life because I grew up poor, and you know, it kind of just went from there. You know, back then I was just looking for the wrong things, you know.
Crystal, how lucrative did it get for you?
I was making about $20,000 to $30,000 a month.
Wow, $20,000 or $30,000 a month. That's beyond what most folks listening to this show could ever imagine them making within a month's point of time. So what is it after 10 years in that world that caused you to drop it, leave it, and all of a sudden find religion and become a pastor?
It you know, I started on Easter Sunday. I was I went through like a horrible 4-year mentally, physically abusive relationship, and I just felt empty and lost inside. And you know, like, porn just wasn't me. It was like I acted for so long, and I was trying to put up with this image of, you know, this fake Barbie doll for so long, and it's like, you know, that wasn't where I wanted to be. And then, you know, when my sister invited me out to church one Easter Sunday morning, and that day the preacher was like speaking right to me and telling me to let go, basically let go of everything, let go of my old life, let go of everything. And I got down on my knees and in church and just bawled my eyes out crying, just lifted my hands to the Lord and gave everything to the Lord. And it took about 2 months for a transition for me to like start learning the Word of God and stuff to start feeling that conviction on me with everything.
Now, Crystal, did in the course of you being a pastor and making that transition from the porn industry, anyone ever come up to you and recognize you from your days when you were doing triple X rated films?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it took a little while. You know, like people would come up to me and they would start, you know, saying my name. And I'm like, nah, that's not me anymore. And people would reference me as like, oh, there's that porn star. And I would speak up. They're like, nope, the ex-porn star. You know, I'm a pastor now. I don't even associate with that name anymore or any of that stuff. I completely walk away from it.
Now, Crystal, a final question. Have any of the colleagues from your past life, when you were in the porn industry, ever reached out to you and tried to follow your path out? Or have you ever had the inclination to call any of them and let them know there's a better life outside of the world that they're living in?
Yeah, there was one girl that I actually got into the adult industry with me. She and after I left, she stayed in the industry for a while, and she got into drugs heavily and everything else. And I actually contacted her about a year ago and started talking to her, and she's now out of the adult industry. She's been clean from drugs, everything. I mean, she's doing amazing. She started going to church too.
Well, it's an amazing story. In fact, if you want to go online and read more, it was in the New York Post. The title was Porn Then and Born Again, The Life of Crystal Bassett. Born poor, pregnant at 16, goes into the adult entertainment industry for 10 years, makes a lot of dough, suddenly has an epiphany, walks away, and is now the pastor of New Beginnings Christian Life Church in upstate New York.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
All right. Honey came in and she got me red-handed, creepy with the girl next door. Picture this, we were both butt naked, banging on the bathroom.
5:41 on the drive home at 5. And we truly are blessed here because right before the hawk is talking and the temperatures plunge below zero, we've been joined by a guy who probably gets more FaceTime than any other analyst, commentator, talking head on TV, Steve Adubato. And I see you've brought your son with you wearing the Seton Hall Pirates hat. I hate Seton Hall with a passion, but that's okay. He's
my son Nick is with me. He's 14 years old. He loves you here on WABC. Let's say he leans politically in a certain direction.
Okay.
What do you think that is?
To the left.
No.
Oh, actually to the right. He's a new Jack.
Let's just say I'm not sure exactly where he picked up those views.
Well,
not in our home.
It wasn't from his grandfather, and it wasn't from you. I can assure you that.
He's an independent thinker.
But anyway, you have won Emmys, and you are regularly seen on PBS's flagship WNET and NJTV. But I have a feeling with this brand new premiere episode, State of Affairs, that you've got another Emmy coming. Because this is hot stuff. Can I play some excerpts?
The new series, State of Affairs?
State of Affairs. In fact, listen to who he has on the show.
This weekend.
What are your thoughts on threesomes, yay or nay?
Nay.
Depends on who the third is.
I love Ray Liotta.
That's Ray Liotta, New Jersey born, right?
Let me tell you something, Justin, you knew that. That's why you were laughing. Let me tell you something.
Well, wait. It says State of Affairs, isn't that?
Let me tell you something.
I
came in here to the studios here at WABC to do a straight up. I'm a PBS guy. You can't do this to me.
But this is Bravo. This is Andy Cohen's network. Look, listen to Steve ask the question. You have J-Lo and Ray Liotta from New Jersey. You know Ray.
Of course. He's one of my people.
Okay, listen.
What about videoing yourself in action?
No.
Have you ever, J-Lo?
Curtis, let me tell you something.
It's going to be a hit.
Curtis, let me tell you. I've got Ambassador Phil Murphy this weekend on State of Affairs. In all seriousness. Talking taxes, pension, what the Republicans are going to do with the ACA. And you're going to play this stuff and trivialize the important issues of today.
The former ambassador, Phil Murphy.
That's right.
Who wants to become John Corzine, Daddy Warbucks, number two.
He wants to become governor of New Jersey.
And buy the governorship like Corzine did.
That's how you choose to frame it.
He's spending millions of dollars.
Phil Murphy can choose to frame it on his own. I pressed him hard, as you know I always do, and every other major candidate running for governor of New Jersey to replace Governor Chris Christie.
Well, what do you make of Murphy? Because obviously he's not as well known as John Corzine was,
he
coming from Goldman Sachs and obviously having
not necessarily the greatest personality, but he was, I think, a better known millionaire. What is different about Murphy than from what the New Jersey residents are used to from Corzine?
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to say this about Phil Murphy. He's got an engaging personality. He's easy to talk to. And I remember Corzine, as we all do. Corzine was awkward in public, to be very candid. He wasn't all that great on television. Murphy's interview on State of Affairs on PBS this weekend, WNET, NJTV, WHYY, and Fios, he will speak for himself. He's learning the issues. He's getting into this late. Yes, he put a lot of money out, $10 million of his own dollars right away. But it isn't going to be money alone, Curtis, that's going to win this race. I say post-Donald Trump, people are more independent than ever before, and you're going to have more than money. You have to have a stand on issues that people are going to respond to, and he's going to have to beat a lot of other people to win this race.
Now, he's in the shadow of the outgoing governor, your friend, person you've had many sit-downs and interviews with, both in a friendly manner and an adversarial manner.
Both.
El Jefe Shamu, Chris Christie.
Now, come on. What are you going to... Let me tell you, I came to the studio, and you promised me you'd play it straight.
Well, on PBS they do, but not on the Curtis Sliwa show.
Let me tell you, when you come on my show on PBS, you don't do this. You act totally...
Well, that's your house. In fact, let me relate to people. People don't know this. I was at the U.S. Open. I was forced to go there because I hate tennis.
Yes, we know.
By my former boss.
You hate golf, too, but go ahead.
Right, but I jumped off a train that had stalled. I ran to catch a connection in New Jersey to join you in a studio.
That's right.
And your other guest that day was then-Governor John Corzine, who actually in the green room had quite the personality. He was telling jokes. He was sociable. Then he gets on with you. And he becomes this stiff big bird with this dumb beard on. What, you know that off camera,
yes,
the guy had a great personality.
Something happened. Now, when you were talking to him, was he engaging with you? Was he fun with you?
Oh, he was telling jokes. He had memory. Right. You know, he was...
And Governor Chris Christie, in spite of all the nasty things you say about him, I bet you he'd be the same way with you.
I never met him.
Get out of here.
I was one of his initial supporters when he left the U.S. Attorney's office because Rudy Giuliani was his mentor when said he would run for the governorship. I got smacked around in the Republican primary. But I actually, as much as I fat shame him, I have never met Chris Christie. And I have a feeling if he ever had become the U.S. Attorney General in the Trump administration, I'd be on Gitmo as we speak.
No. You think Chris Christie has that kind of vengeful personality?
Absolutely.
Come on.
It's in the veins and arteries of everybody in New Jersey. But
you think it's a Jersey thing?
Give me a prediction. What do you think will become of Chris Christie now that he's playing out his last term in office?
I think Governor Chris Christie, who I've had adversarial conversations on the air with, and if he were to come on State of Affairs, it would be the same way. He speaks his own point of view. And I'll say this. I think he wants to make a lot of money. He may be in your business as a sports guy at another place. I think he could be at a major conservative television station. I think he could be at a law firm. I think his career in public life, he's going to have to ask himself if he really wants to be in it anymore. This presidential campaign was very tough for him.
Well, we know where to find you, the PBS flagship station, WNET and NJTV. And now with the debut of State of Affairs, it debuts tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow morning on NJTV, WNET, WHYY, and Fios. And my first guest is Ambassador
Murphy.
That's right.
The John Corzine wannabe. By the way, why don't you have me on so I can talk about Jose Joey Torres, that crook from Paterson, New Jersey?
Would you come on State of Affairs?
Oh, absolutely.
And you'll be the PBS.
I can tell you about all the affairs I've had in my life that have gotten me into hot water.
You'll be the PBS, Curtis Sliwa.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, you'll actually give me some intelligentsia.
You know, there's so many Curtis Sliwas. By the way, my son has been smiling the whole time. He likes seeing me get embarrassed on the air or any place. He just enjoys it.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Adubato Jr., Steve Adubato Jr., and give my best to your daddy in Newark, Adubato Sr.
He loves you, too. And by the way, we're going to in the garden tonight, Seton Hall playing Villanova. We got any chance?
I want Villanova to smash them. Smash
Seton Hall! Come on!
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
To my ears betwixt me on the drive home at 5. The Argentine Pope Francis, who at times I've thought is closer to Che Guevara than he is to Jesus Christ, said something in an interview to a German journalist that completely flips the script on anything he has said in the past or any of the previous popes have about the potentiality of men being able to get married and be priests. We're checking in with Kevin McCormick, co-host of Religion on the Line. You can hear it every Sunday morning, 7:30 to 9, with his co-host, Rabbi Joe Potashnick. It's the longest-lasting talk radio program in this format at WABC since we flipped from spinning stacks of wax top 40 years ago to talk radio. Thanks for jumping on board again, Kev.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you, Curtis?
I'm feeling good if, in fact, this is true of what Pope Francis has said. Has he opened the door slightly to the potentiality that priests may be able to actually get married and have families?
Well, actually, there's a little bit of inside baseball here. We actually do have married priests. They are the exception, but if someone is an Anglican or other religions, possibly even Lutherans, and they convert over into Catholicism and they're already ministers, oftentimes they become ordained priests and they keep their families and they live as married men. We also have Eastern Catholic churches which have married men as priests too, but the majority of priests, the people who are listening to us now, they're not, they're celibate men, and the Pope said we have to look at it. This is a church law, not a God law.
All right, but he was saying it in reference to finding priests to go tend to the flock in the Amazonian jungles and the rainforest. I got to tell you, Kevin, all he's got to do is look at parishes throughout the United States, which there's a dearth of priests, so much so we're importing them in from Colombia, Nigeria, and Poland.
Yeah, you're 100% right, and India and Sri Lanka and places like that as well. There are other places in America out west where they don't have a priest for a week at a time, I mean for a month at a time, or that a priest has to travel over 200 or 300 miles in a given day to say Mass in a bunch of places. I would say that we do have a need for more priests, no question about it.
Now, where would the opposition come if, in fact, the Pope opened the door to this concept? Because I don't get a sense at the parish level, at least here in the United States, that exists.
I don't know if there'd be a terrible uprising against it. We have deacons. I'm a Roman Catholic deacon for the Rockville Center Diocese. And I have a family, I have a job, and I do my deacon work on weekends. I also do it in my high school as well. So there is a model in which married men could be clerics and are clerics, but the priesthood right now, there's some concern about how you would support a family. So if it was a young man coming out, and how would we take care of that? These are all reasonable questions, though, that could be answered if we put our mind to it.
Would this eventually translate to the nuns in the convent?
I'm sure there's a big distinction when he talks about women priests and male priests. And right now, women priests are off the discussion completely. John Paul II spoke about that many years ago. There is talk, however, of female deacons.
Now, Kevin McCormick, as a deacon, what are you able to do that a priest can do, and what can't you do what a priest can do?
Well, I witness marriages. I help out at funerals. I give out communion. I preach. What I can't do is I can't say Mass, and I can't hear confessions, and I can't ordain people.
And very briefly, when did the church change the law? Because the original church, men were getting married at that time. And why was the change made?
More or less, it was about 1,000 years ago. I could be more specific, but you know, on a Friday afternoon, I think that'll do. And a lot of it had to do with discipline within the church. And it also had to do with the spirituality of the priest, but those are the two reasons. But about 1,000 years ago, it became the law.
I'm sure, Kevin McCormick, you're going to be discussing this Sunday morning on Religion on the Line with your co-host, Rabbi Joe Potashnick. You don't want to miss it. It's not just about religion.